Stories about Black identity that aren't always shared in the open.
Shh, girl, we can't say that.
It's like a griot,
a hair salon,
a newsroom,
and your mama's kitchen all in one.
The Stoop.
Hey, Lila.
Hey, Anna. So today we're getting into this conversation about going back to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, there's been a lot of African immigrants moving back to the continent.
Right. And there's a lot more opportunity for work in many parts of Africa right now. You know, people that have come here, got their degrees, got some experience. Now they're going back home to make things happen.
Yeah. And you know, more and more people have started going back just this past decade.
Yeah.
Researchers at UPenn surveyed African immigrants on whether they would eventually go back home,
mm-hmm.
and 80% said, yeah, they would.
Which is interesting. Some folks are calling it the African brain gain.
Because before, it was a lot of higher educated Africans leaving the country.
Right.
It was the brain drain.
Right.
Now it's the gain, right?
There's a million and one reasons to go back to Africa. And today, we're going to get into three people's stories, right?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Here we go.
This is weird. This can't be the right guy.
What was wrong?
According to his relationship status on Facebook, he's married.
Mm-hmm. What?
Ooh, this is Zainab, and this is a clip from a show called An African City. It's like the African Sex and the City.
When a man in Ghana says that he's single, it means that his wife is just in another country or in another city or the other room.
Okay, so this show is all about a group of African women who moved back to Ghana after living abroad.
Uh-huh.
And in this scene, Zainab is sitting in her living room in Accra with her girlfriends. You know, they're hanging out.
Right.
And she just made this move from Philadelphia, and she met this guy she's uh-huh. telling her friends about.
Uh-huh.
And her friend Sade is filling her in on the dating scene in Ghana.
Yes.
But he wasn't even wearing a wedding ring.
Please, girl, there's a reason those things come off. You know, half the men in this city don't wear their rings. You've been warned.
But we talked about this. We even talked about his family. All he mentioned was a brother and sister in Joburg.
He meant a son and a daughter in Joburg.
Oh, my God.
Scandalous.
Mm-hmm. So, Zainab's character is played by Mami Ajay.
My name is Mami Ajay.
Okay, so this show has tons of viewers,
mm-hmm.
and it's based in Ghana. And, you know, a program like this can only be successful because Mame knew that a choice had to be made.
I went to Ghana in September of 2012 for a short 2-week vacation, and by the time I was leaving, I knew that I was ready to move back. And I'm never able to really verbalize exactly why, but I just felt it so deeply.
So her parents sent her to the U.S. for college when she was 18.
I always wanted to go to Temple University because for not some strange reason, my father always wanted to go to Temple University because of Bill Cosby, believe it or not. I studied psychology in undergrad, and I wanted to be a psychotherapist. And my parents were all for it because I had a very good reason. Mental health disease runs in my family, so I wanted to be on that track. But then I deviated from it, obviously, because now I'm an actor. And, you know, my mother is still asking me what I'm doing with my life.
But she says she didn't actually plan to go back to Ghana.
That was never the plan. I think once I was 5 years in the States, I just thought I would live in America and, you know, build my American dream. That was always the plan.
She lived 12 years here in the States. She got 2 degrees, a job in healthcare finance, but something was off.
You know, I felt like I had maxed out my time in the States, and I felt like it was just time for me to move back to my country.
She just wanted to go home. You know, which for a lot of people, it's kind of like, what? You know, people dream of coming to America and staying here, living here, and you want to go back home? Even her mom was confused.
She was like, why are you coming back? For what? But I just felt it. I didn't know why. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what path it would take. I had no idea. I just knew that I had to go. So I went back to the States end of September. By December 1st of the same year, I was back in Ghana. I'd shipped all my things, and I was back. I move in with my brother and I start looking for a job in healthcare finance. And I go on about 2 or 3 interviews. And after each interview, I realize that this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. It was never what I was supposed to be doing. I just fell into it. And now I've moved my life across the world back to my country. Why am I about to jump into something that is just not my passion?
You know, Lila, how mommy keeps saying, I had to go, I had to go, I don't know why. That urge, you know, that urge is something a lot of folks feel. It's like home calls you almost. We have this old wives' tale back in Sudan that wherever your navel, you know, your belly button was buried after birth, that place calls you back one day.
Are you talking about the umbilical cord?
I'm talking about the umbilical cord. I have a friend right here in California, not mentioning any names. When she had her first child, she took his umbilical cord and buried it under a tree at Stanford University so he can end up there.
Oh, that's a good idea. My parents should have taken mine on the White House lawn.
The lawn, right? Not...
The garden.
In the garden. So you want to be a gardener at the White House.
Garden.
That doesn't necessarily mean you'll be in the White House.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to mommy.
All right.
Okay. So Ghana was calling her, right? And that's a struggle a lot of people have. They are wondering, when I come to the U.S., am I making it my permanent home? Is this it? And so many people struggle with this question. Am I an immigrant or am I an expat?
But Lila, folks who've studied African return migration, they talk about some of the biggest reasons people go back, and a big one is lifestyle. They find this American daily grind to be too stressful. Hello, I mean, we feel it's stressful, right? So they're like, this isn't like back home. But another big one is family. There's a study, 70% of people who said they would move back have mothers who are alive back home.
And it's also really about culture, because another study asked, when comparing the culture of your country of birth to the culture of the U.S., which do you prefer? And 81% said the culture of their home country.
Right. But, you know, maybe the most telling one was people's answer to the question, do you wish to be buried in your home country? And the majority said a solid yes. So getting back to mommy, when she went back, she first started trying to understand, to really, really understand where she's from.
So I stopped and I just decided I'm going to take 2013 off. I'm going to live on my cashed out 401k and I'm going to travel Ghana and figure it out and see where the wind blows me. And that's exactly what happened. The wind blew me somewhere.
So she started documenting her travels. That turned into a travel blog.
Today is going to be a good day, I can tell. Water, Ada, history, girl going places.
She traveled all over Ghana to islands, she went to small towns, and she posted videos on YouTube.
Yeah, some of it was really beautiful.
And some, not so much. Like when a stranger spit on her on camera.
Yeah, someone just spat in my face.
Expect the unexpected. That was certainly not normal for Accra, but sometimes strange things happen.
Then mommy was discovered by a producer.
Nicole Amatefio, who's the creator of An African City, reached out to me by Facebook. And she said, you know, I'm producing this show. Do you act? And I was like, nope, don't act, not interested. And for about 3 months, she followed me, called me, hounded me. And yeah, she believed that for whatever reason that that role was meant for me. And I was like, okay, well, I'm kind of figuring things out. And you know, okay, let me try it. And I did. It's crazy because as we were filming, season one, I had just been in Ghana for about 6 months. And so everything that the character was going through as far as electricity not working and water not running and traffic, I was also experiencing as, you know, a new returnee.
Which reminds me, Nanea, did you bring the thing I asked you to buy from the States for me?
Yeah. Seriously, Zainab, you can buy that here. Why do you always get returnees to bring you back Pepto-Bismol, of all things?
Ever since this one got back, her stomach has never been the same.
It's crazy. If I would have known that I would have left Philadelphia, left my desk job at a hospital to come to Accra, and now I can actually introduce myself to people as an actor and producer, it's like, it just, yeah, it's crazy.
But Mommy says it's not just about career and money for her. Going back to Ghana did something else.
It gave me a confidence that I just did not have before living in Philadelphia, living outside of Ghana. And I gained peace. Like, there's just nowhere that gives me more peace than Ghana, you know? I'm living, every day I wake up and I'm living the life I want to live. I'm pursuing the work I want to pursue. It's been the best decision I've made ever, ever.
Hana, I want to visit the motherland. What's it like for you when you go back? Do you feel, you know, that strong connection?
I do, but I mean, when we were little here in the States, I grew up here. We would go on vacations, you know, every 2 or 3 years, we'd go for like a month. And I feel like that wasn't enough to really like form that kind of bond that Mommy is talking about, right? Because she kind of grew up there and then came to the States. But a month every 3 or 4 years just isn't enough to connect with a place, you know? So when we'd go on vacation, I always felt foreign.
For me, my experience going back to Africa, I am not African, but it was a little different. I remember when I went to Kenya when I was in college, I met this other student.
Uh-huh.
He was another college student. And he said, you know, where are you from? And I said, I'm African American. And he was like, there's nothing African about you.
Oh.
I know. I was just like, it got me. It got me. Like, I was just like, wow. There's some things I need to understand here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
But it's like.
It's just different.
Yeah. It's different. It's like going back to a country you've never lived in. You know, for you, you're generations removed.
Mm.
But even for Africans, it feels, you know, distant sometimes. Like we're learning something new about us when we go back.
My name is Ya Jesse.
Ya Jesse is an award-winning author, and she's also from Ghana.
New York Times bestseller. She grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, always wanted to be a writer.
Butterfly in the sky.
The first story I ever wrote, I wrote when I was 7 for the Reading Rainbow Young Writers and Illustrators
Reading
competition.
Rainbow.
LeVar Burton signed my certificate and sent it back, and I feel like that was the first kind of stamp of approval for this profession.
A reading rainbow.
So it was going back to a very specific place in Ghana that changed Ya.
There's a door that actually says the door of no return. And when you open that, it leads out onto the beach. And then the ships would be waiting from there to take them on to wherever they were about to spend the rest of their lives as slaves. And the tour guide spoke to us about things like the British soldiers marrying the local women. And then he also took us down to see the dungeons. But he also spoke very frankly about the different roles that the ethnic groups in the Gold Coast at the time played in the slave trade. And he spoke about it so freely and in a way that I hadn't really heard before, because though I knew it, it was also the kind of thing that people spoke about in whispers.
What was it like standing there?
Truly harrowing, I think. Probably the most rage and grief that I've ever felt, you know, all at once. It's hard to imagine keeping people in a room like that dungeon for, you know, months at a time. And I only had to stand in there for 5 minutes and felt, you know, totally uncomfortable.
Was your rage and anger for the slaves who ended up in the U.S. being African-American slaves, or was it more anger against the people who were complicit from West Africa, from Ghana?
Oh, it was both. It was all of it. I mean, it was just it just feels so unfathomable that you could even see a place like this and continue to perpetrate these atrocities against people. You know, how did it last as long as it did?
It was this trip back to Ghana, a place Yaa hadn't been since she was 2 years old, that set the stage for her novel, Homegoing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in this story, Hannah, in Homegoing, it gets straight to your gut.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a story about two half-sisters, and they're torn apart to live two very different lives.
By the time Efia had reached age 10, she could recite a history of the scars on her body. For each scar on Efia's body, there was a companion scar on Baba's.
One sister is sold into slavery and ends up in the U.S. And the other sister, you know, she just continues her life in Ghana. And the book follows each sister for 7 generations.
I would say the research is when I felt, you know, sad and angry and all of that. But when I was writing, I at least got to console myself with the fact that it was fiction, and I was making these people up. And you can't do that when you're reading about real people's lives.
And Leela, that research she's talking about that made her so sad was, she went back and she learned about the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she learned about Ghanaian tribes competing in catching slaves to sell to the British who were conducting the slave trade there. And it was really painful for her to learn about this history.
When I told my parents what I was working on and asked them if they had learned about any of this in school, they said no. So my impression is that at least, you know, when my parents were coming up, that it wasn't something that was taught in schools in the same way that we in America at least do have, you know, a chapter on slavery in our history classes.
I mean, I think that's right for many people who've had to kind of discover their ancestors' ugly histories,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, like in Sudan, there's a slave trade history with Arab slave trade happening in East Africa, across the continent from where Yaa is. But it's not a conversation that's usually had like it is here in the United States, right? Like neither mm-hmm. me nor my parents learned any of this. In school, it's just not in the textbooks. And for Yaa Jesse, learning about all this, I mean, it really was life-changing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that experience was really formative and enlightening, but one thing that I think visiting the castle really did for me was, first of all, give me the idea for this book, but it also just felt like a way to kind of talk about slavery more fully, more holistically than I had ever seen it talked about before.
All right, Leela, now we're going to go from Ghana to Sudan.
Mm-hmm. Of course we're going to Sudan.
What?
Always taking us back to your motherland. Here we go. Can't stay in Ghana too long. Let's go.
What do you do? You're sitting in your car?
Can you see the traffic? Of course I'm in my car.
It's real hot.
Yep, very, very, very
hot. And you're stuck in traffic? Ride Along. Your way out from Sunday to Wednesday, 12 p.m. on Capital Radio 91.6.
Okay, this is a new radio station in the capital city, Khartoum, and it's called Capital 91.6 FM. 91.6 FM. It's the only music station in Sudan that broadcasts only in English. All English all the time. They play all kinds of music, and they have some talk shows, too. It's really popular.
Hello and welcome to FEM Incorporated on the heartbeat of Sudan, capital.
Okay, so this radio station is owned by Taha Ruby. Mm-hmm. He's a Sudanese-American, and he used to live in the States. He was a DJ in D.C. back in the day.
So it was the days of Eric B. and Rakim, Paid in Full.
Thinking of a master plan. This ain't nothing but sweat inside my hand.
The house music at the time, I think it was Move Your Body, which was a house music anthem. And it was the music of the time. And the music I'm into is it's all about positivity. House music is very positive music. It's all about good times.
But times weren't so good back in Sudan. The war between North and South Sudan was raging on. The economy was bad. There was hardly any work. The military government was sending young men to the battlefield in droves. They weren't even soldiers. They were just sent to fight. People were getting out in the 90s and early 2000s.
And war is a big reason why many immigrants leave in the first place. Mm-hmm. Even today, with thousands of Africans fleeing violence and trying to cross the Mediterranean to get into Europe. Mm-hmm. All this stuff is still going on.
It is. And for Taha, it was the news that came in 2005 that changed everything for him.
The Sudanese government and Southern Rebel Group signed an agreement Sunday after 3 years of negotiation. The agreement seeks a comprehensive settlement after 21 years.
And then the peace treaty came into effect. I'm like, okay, now that's the one. Okay, peace treaty. And so that was my marker. So I came back here. And I decided to set up shop here and start doing business.
So people were starting to move back to Sudan.
I don't think I would have really made much of a dent in the States in terms of change or anything. There isn't much to change there. I mean, there isn't, but there isn't, you know. Not in the scope of change that I'm speaking about here for Sudan. And so I'm like, you know, I think my time here is better spent in trying to do something positive here in Sudan, more than in the States, I think.
With this peace agreement.
So that's one thing, Hana, you know, you go back and you feel like you can make a bigger dent if you go back.
Yeah.
If you went back to live in Sudan, what would you get into? Would you be a journalist there? What do you think?
I mean, it's tough being a journalist in Sudan today. Like I said, it's ruled by a military government, right? And they're very wary of any kind of journalism or media that can affect their message, right? And the government is constantly shutting down newspapers when they don't like what they say. Reporters Without Borders ranks Sudan horribly in terms of press freedom. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know.
Maybe you wouldn't work in radio there. I'm getting that vibe from you.
Maybe.
But that's what Taha decided to do.
Mm-hmm. And girl, that wasn't easy. The government was not into his idea. It took him 7 years just to get a license.
I started applying in May 2007, and I got rejected continuously.
Based on, did they give you reasons?
No, there's just no reasons. It's just, we don't need it. Why should we have a radio station? Why should we have a music radio station? Why should it be an English radio station? For a long time, it was just wasn't well accepted.
The station changed a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's where he trained people.
Well, we have a glass window, and on the other side is the controls, our technician.
He was promoting community events.
And on this side, the one we're on right now, is where all the presenters sit and we have the interviews and what have you.
And he basically completely started over, and lots of people started listening.
Radio is a very delicate thing. You're talking to a lot of people. You're influencing a lot of people. People actually believe you, whatever you say. Because you're the radio, you know, so a piece of news, in fact, whatever, if you don't, you know, vet your stuff really well, you're taken on, you know, whatever you say is basically it's like the Bible or the Quran for them.
Okay, so Taha has his radio station. It's becoming increasingly popular because it's this hybrid, right, of U.S. and Sudanese, and it's just like a different sound all around. He was training young people to host radio shows for the first time. Mm.
So Taha is doing his thing.
He is, but, you know, still, he is under no illusions. He is very aware of the reality. The government's watching, and to stay on the air, he plays by the rules.
I mean, I don't house my transmitter here in-house. It's with the authorities, so I really don't control my output. I'm not really in control. They can shut me down any minute they want.
But for now, he's making his dent.
We harness that positive energy. We have a special kind of vibe in this place.
And that's The Stoop.
Le Stoop.
Today we had engineering and sound design by Gabe Graben. Special thanks to Dan Treitel. Music by Daoud Anthony, Mazen Jamal, and DJ Taha Ruby.
Support for The Stoop comes from the NPR Story Lab and from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Find them at calhum.org.
Our radio home is KALW San Francisco.
There's more about today's episode at thestoop.org.
And one more thing, Lilo.
Mm-hmm.
If you love radio storytelling and you want to learn how to make and tell stories, consider applying to the Transom Story Workshop. It's a 9-week audio intensive in Cape Cod, beautiful place. Transom supports diversity in voices and offers full scholarships to make that happen. Go to transom.org to apply by December 1st.
Yep.
Bye, Lilo.
Bye, Hannah.